Cultivate Simple, Episode 10, Real Food for Your Pets.
I'd rather be a farmer. I'd rather work the land. I'd rather see the mountainside.
Welcome to Cultivate Simple, another episode about an unrehearsed and honest discussion trying to live a more simple life. Wow, that was terrible. Let's try that one more time. It's the bells. They're distracting me. Welcome to Cultivate Simple, an honest and unrehearsed discussion about trying to live a more simple life. This is episode 10, and today our main topic is going to be discussing feeding your pets real food. And as you can tell, the bells, they are chiming. Why don't you tell us, why don't you turn your mic around there? Now, you just bumped everybody's eardrums there. So, what kind of bells are we listening to there?
These are little angel chimes. So I'll put a link in the show notes. You can get them off Amazon. They're just these. I mean, they're kind of chintzy little brass chimes that you get. They're these little angels, and you put candles underneath them, and the heat comes up and makes them spin around, and then they play bells. And when we were kids, we had a set of these, and it was the highlight of our Christmas to pull them out and fire them up, and we just loved it. We got to light them, I don't know, a couple times during the Christmas season, I think, but they were always lit and chiming when we were opening presents and stuff, and we always thought they were super great. And a couple of years ago, my mom found them somewhere that you used to not be able to get them anymore, and then my mom found them somewhere on the internet and bought some for me and my sister, so pulled them out today because we were kind of sitting around this afternoon having some hot chocolate by the light of the Christmas tree and pulled out the old angel chimes. So
that was kind of fun.
Brings back some memories.
So they're just dinging here in the background. And
yeah, my mom now has a really nice wooden one. It's not, I mean, they're not the angel chimes, but I can't think of the name of them, but they're a pretty popular Christmas decoration that you can get, the big wooden ones from Europe. So no more little tacky brass ones, but they're just so like old time and fun.
Tacky brass ones that we bent up pretty good just trying to get it set up here.
Yeah.
So we're gonna have to do some bending and you're gonna have to excuse me here in a second. I think my dinger is going to ding. Speaking of dings, I'm trying my hand after, you know, 15 years of marriage, and Susie always cooking for me. Susie does a great job cooking, and I'm not much of a cook. I never have been, and she just does such a wonderful job and actually enjoys doing it that I just let her do it because she's good at it. So I'm trying my hand watching the
River Cottage series.
Yeah, watching Hugh and all his wonderful delights.
Brian's been inspired.
I'm inspired because I have a sweet tooth, and I like, not necessarily a sweet tooth, because that indicates candy or fudge or that kind of
thing.
You
have a sweet tooth.
I like fruit desserts. That's kind of my thing. So as we went out shopping and did a couple other things this week, I picked up some ingredients here and there, and so I'm making an apple and rum raisin crumble,
brandied
raisin.
You used
crumble.
We went out, we searched around to try it because we were supposed to use apple. He was supposed to use apple brandy to soak the raisins, and so we did a little googling to find a local product. Of course, we found a little distillery about 15 miles away,
right,
that makes applejack and maple spirits. So we went up there. They were closed, of course, as most.
It seems like most places are here in Maine. They say, hey, stop in anytime.
Yeah.
And you stop in and they're closed.
Always closed. But that's all right.
We went
to the local liquor store, which was an experience.
Yeah.
Since we were not very, you know.
We're not big drinkers at all.
We're not big drinkers at all.
Oh,
so
there's my bell. Keep talking.
So yeah, heading into the liquor store, and we looked around and finally found these two local liquors. So we bought them to use in this recipe, and then we made some, that evening actually, we ended up making some eggnog, and we put some of the maple spirits in it. We went down to the neighbor's for dinner, and we took some of that down there. So we tried some eggnog with a little bit of maple spirits in it, which was pretty good. Homemade eggnog is awesome if you have never made it at home, it's super simple and super easy. Essentially, it's eggs and milk with some cream if you want it to be really good, a pinch of salt, some nutmeg, and you're good to go pretty much. You just mix it all up together and drink it down. When I was younger, I used to make cooked eggnog, which always was weird to me because it wasn't like the kind that you would, it was just was never quite right. And so now I make it, we go all out, use raw milk and raw eggs, and Weston A. Price would be proud. It's a good healthy beverage that way, I think. It's fantastic. Wasn't the eggnog really good?
Yeah, I wasn't listening to anything you were saying while I was checking
I was talking
out.
About the spirits, and then I said we bought some maple stuff and we put it in the eggnog because eggnog, so...
Yeah, I gave it another 5 minutes. It looks like it needs... Maybe I'll have you check the next time.
Right. Yeah,
no, I'm going to do it. I'm going to make the decision. I'm going to either say it's good or it's not.
Mr. Cheez.
Yes. The eggnog was very good. And did you talk about heating it up then, too?
No,
we drank it cold, but then we had a little bit left over, and we wanted a warm beverage before bed, and so Susie heated it up a little bit, and it was interesting, because it kind of almost started to cook the eggs, not, you know, in that it turned into an omelet or something.
It turned into a custard.
It turned into a custard.
Like a custard beverage, kind of.
So it was really good. It was good that way as well, so yeah.
It was very filling that way.
Do you have a recipe for the eggnog, or is that something we could post?
No, I'll probably have to put... It's super easy. I just need to take the time to write it all down.
Why don't you do a post this week on it?
I will.
Because, I mean, it's pretty timely with Christmas coming up for the holidays. Ooh, we should do a video. If we had time, we would do a video.
That's right.
But we don't have any time this week. I'm still editing weddings and getting those things done and trying to get them done all before Christmas so that I can send them out to all of our clients. So it was another busy week this week. I just want to, actually, before we get into the topic for today and everything else, I just wanted to mention the calendars, because we're getting down to the Christmas day here pretty soon. And so ordering calendars as gifts, if you haven't seen the calendars, go over to the website and you can click in the sidebar and go to Hulu's the TV thing. Lulu, which is what we use to print up the calendars. It's a third-party company, and they do a great job printing them. They look excellent. We've been passing them out as gifts to our friends and family who absolutely love them. They get them every year.
I got them 1 year. What was that? 4 years ago, I think. I decided to do calendars, so I got them printed. Excuse me.
Yes.
I got them printed up for family and friends, and everybody loves them, and everybody requested them the next year. So I went ahead and did them the next year. And it's funny, because last year I sent them out to my some of my college girlfriends. It was like, we've been doing this thing. We get together every year, and we always bring what we call prizes, which are just like little gifts that we give to each other. And I do photo books sometimes, and I did last year I mailed everybody a calendar. And it's funny, because I got a message on Facebook from one of my girlfriends, and she said, Suze, I am just mourning that I'm getting towards the end of the calendar that you gave me, and I really need to get a link so I can head on over and buy another one, because I just love having, you know, those pictures of your garden in my house every month. You know, she said they're just really great. So I, of course, told her not to buy one, because one was going to be en route soon, but...
So yeah, if you still need a gift idea, especially if there's a gardener in your life, this calendar is a great gift to give. And so head over to the blog. You can go to cultivatesimple.com, and in the sidebar there, we'll see images of the calendars. There's two different sizes, a small and a large. And I believe, you know, usually if you do a Retail Me Not search, usually they have some sort of coupon going on, and especially with the holiday, they probably do. So, and if they do, we can post one in the show notes. So check that out. Because I'm not sure if they do or not.
They're doing like a 13 days of Christmas.
Okay.
Or 12 days of, I don't know why I said 13. 12 days of Christmas, yeah.
On the 13th day of Christmas.
Yeah. And they always put their stuff up on their Facebook page, too. So I get their emails since I've ordered from them. But yeah, but you can go to their Facebook page or go to their website, and they'll have the different sales up there.
And just another mention, too, just want to thank you guys again for using our Amazon affiliate link. if you, again, if you head over to cultivatesimple.com/support and you click on the Amazon link, we get a few pennies from each of the purchases that you make. And if you just want to bookmark that and use that every time you buy something from Amazon, and whenever you're looking for anything, search Amazon, because they probably have it and it can probably be delivered for free, which saves you a little bit of gas and a little bit of time.
I always go there and at least search and read the reviews, because I find the review system on Amazon to be phenomenal. As far as people are usually really honest, I always read a couple of the top ones, and I always go and read the 1-star and the 2-star. Of course, often it's, stupid people that are like, I received this and it was broken, so I'm going to give the item 1-star. Well, return
which,
it. And,
you know, stuff happens in shipping.
Yeah, it happens in shipping. Review the product, not the shipping.
Or they buy a shovel and they're like, oh, I thought this was going to be an oven.
Yeah, those
just like,
are funny.
What?
Yeah.
What are you talking about? So, yeah. Yeah, so, but it's good for reviews, but this month, and I don't know if it's because of Christmas, I hope it's not because of Christmas, I hope it's because you guys are actually using the link now, and it's starting to become routine, but we're actually doing really well. We're going to be able to pay the hosting and then some this month, so that's great, and we really want to thank you for that.
I'll
so,
be able to buy a book or two, I think.
Yeah, and we do have some books that we want to buy. So we're going to get right into the topic then. I say that after we've been rambling for 12 minutes now. So, but we're going to get into the topic because it's an interesting one, and it's one that a lot of people have asked about. And that is feeding your pets real food or a raw food diet, for your animals.
And it doesn't have to be raw. We started out
that's true.
With real food, cooking it. Mm-hmm. And then I read a lot more about the raw food diet and decided to give raw feeding a try. And
It's interesting because, you know, in the way that we feel about food and in the way that I know that a lot of you listeners feel about food, and that's why you read the blog, and about growing your own and about having, you know, simple, pure food, and yet for our animals, we feed them highly processed kibble and all this other stuff. So that's what we're going to talk about today, is just feeding your animals a little bit more real food, because that's what they would be eating normally. So how do you want to start off this topic? Or did I just completely bash you upside the head with a curveball there?
I'll talk about, you're going to get, the interesting thing about feeding raw is, you're going to get not necessarily just raw, even if you want to cook. You know, there are tons of recipes out there for homemade dog food. My mom makes homemade dog food, and she doesn't feed raw, and she doesn't do grain-free. She has this recipe she makes with, I think it has brown rice and venison and maybe some oatmeal. I can't remember what all she has in it. And she puts pumpkins in it and zucchini and vegetables that she grows in the garden and has tons of in the summer. And she puts, I think, some lard in it and a bunch of other stuff. She's kind of developed her own recipe through the years that she uses. So she cooks food for her dogs. We feed, two of our cats get cooked chicken because they don't eat the raw. But once you start to do this, it's interesting because you're going to get this huge backlash from a lot of other people, especially like your veterinarian, maybe, possibly. I mean, some of them aren't like that. Our veterinarian was fine with it and said, oh, that's good. That's healthier for them. So, you know, we were pretty happy about that. And people like at the pet food store, I know one of my friends recently, I've been talking to her about feeding her dogs raw. And she went to the pet store and was talking to, I think there was like a Yukonuba lady, you know, like a pet nutritionist there. And she was just telling her how terrible it was going to be for her pets and how her pets were going to, you know, essentially die on this food. Cause you can't feed them a well-rounded diet when you're feeding them raw at home.
Which, I mean, a lot of the pet food companies, basically their pitch is that, and it's really interesting because there are different types of pet food too. And
right,
maybe we
should
talk about that real quick.
Right. Because we started out feeding our dog, she was getting like Purina Beneful or something like that.
Which,
I mean,
you know, a step up from Old Roy or one of the,
not premium kibble or anything by any means. And then she started having all kinds of health issues. Mm-hmm. She started getting hot spots and she had allergy problems and she would get a lot of ear infections. And so I started doing some research and I found out that food could cause it, particularly corn. And so we cut her off of that food and we started feeding her wellness fish and sweet potato, which, I mean, that made a huge difference in her behavior and her health. And she just kind of did really well on that.
And the difference between wellness and others is that wellness doesn't have a lot of grains in it, correct?
Right. Yes. Yeah. They don't have corn in it.
Okay.
So this food was fish with sweet potatoes and they put lots of fruits and stuff in there, some vegetables and all kinds of stuff. So, I mean, there is a difference between bottom of the barrel kibble and, kind of a higher end kibble. And a higher end kibble is cheaper, but you have to feed about half as much as you do of a cheap kibble.
You said cheaper. It's a little more expensive.
It's more expensive. Yeah. People say it's more expensive to buy. I mean, you would think it would be, but actually ends up being cheaper because you have to feed them.
Right.
At like probably half. Or less than half of what you would feed of a cheap kibble because it doesn't have all kinds of filler and stuff in it.
It actually gives them what they need.
Yeah. So we started feeding her that. And then once we started trying to do the more nourishing traditions, like more of a traditional diet for ourselves and cutting out processed food, then naturally I started looking at our pet food and thinking, I mean, essentially it's like feeding your pet cereal, because
right.
cereal is, you know, supposed to be one of those well-rounded things that has all kinds of vitamins and minerals and stuff
Fruity
added
Pebbles
to it.
Fruity Pebbles has 12 essential vitamins.
Yeah, and so essentially, you know, I thought,
I guess that's
I'm feeding our pets cereal
mm-hmm.
for every meal.
In fact, and now we call them pet Doritos.
Yeah. Yeah, and then I thought, that just can't be right. So I started reading and doing a little more research, and I read about the barf diet, and there, I mean, you'll come upon just,
I'm sorry, the barf
they
diet?
Call it the barf diet, bones and raw
food
or something like that. I don't know the exact, yeah, but it barf, I'm not exactly sure if that's it or not, but that's what it's known as. So if you search for the capital barf diet for pets, you'll come up with all kinds of information. And you'll find all different things on the internet. You'll find people who say that their dog died from eating raw food. And you'll find people that say, you know, their dog was on death's door from cancer and was miraculously healed because of, you know, it's like anything else. Mm-hmm. There's just this huge group of people on both extreme ends of the spectrum.
Right.
And then you have people
like
you
us.
Know, in the middle, people in the middle that have read about it and we've just kind of developed our own system. And that's kind of what I'll talk about today. And
so,
yeah,
and maybe we should stop and just let in, because what we do in our thought process in a lot of things is just to think, I guess you could say logically, or what was the word I just had in my head? But to really think through things in a logical way, in a matter of fact, in a common sense kind of way, I guess you could even say.
I think so.
And so let's think about this in a common sense kind of way for a minute. Now, if Lucy, we just kind of let her do her thing and let her run around the yard and eat whatever she wanted, what would she be eating?
She would be eating animals that she found dead in the woods.
Right. That had been laying there for days.
Yeah. She may or may not catch a rabbit. She's kind of limpy, old, and lame, so she probably wouldn't. But she might be able to catch a rabbit or a squirrel or
When we let her out now, she eats grass.
She does. She eats grass. She goes and eats stuff out of the compost pile, so like half-rotten vegetables.
Mm-hmm. She eats chicken feed, which she's allergic to, and we've
right.
talked about that in the past.
And
that's why we got her off of the pet Doritos,
exactly.
The low-end pet Doritos, because
right.
it gives her hot spots. But,
and yeah, well, and we have an outdoor cat,
mm-hmm.
and she eats grass. But she eats mostly small rodents. I mean,
mm-hmm.
she's pretty as natural as you can get.
So she's a good example.
She's a great example.
A good baseline.
And she's pretty much always had that diet because she was born as a kitten in our garage. You know, she was a feral. Her feral mom brought her it was like 4 weeks old and drug her into our garage. And she's been with us ever since. And it's amazing because she has been the only cat that we've never had any kind of problems with.
No.
She's never had anything whatsoever. She is just healthy as can be. And she's smart and she's slim. She's chunking up a little bit right now for winter, but that's kind of what...
It's all fur, really.
Right.
She's got her fur coat on.
We've noticed that the outdoor cats seem to do that. But yeah, and she's as healthy as anything. I mean, way healthier than, and then we have our cat Dexter, who showed up on our doorstep, and he eats raw. He lives outside and catches mice and chipmunks and stuff and eats those too. So he's kind of a half, I don't know what you would want to call it, like a prey diet and half raw. He'll eat chicken wings and chicken necks and that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And he's way healthier than our other two cats that were kind of raised on kibble.
Which our other two cats have been indoor cats all the time.
Right.
And this isn't really part of the topic, but with Dexter and with the Sweets, our outdoor cat, they've never had any shots or anything like that either.
Right.
Where Samson and Sophie, our other two full-time indoor cats, have.
Right.
That's another topic for another day.
That's a whole other topic. And some
but
people,
just for the full background. Just
right,
for full,
yes, because we also choose to do that. And one of our cats, the reason we ended up doing that is because one of our cats almost died after getting one of his routine vaccinations. Right. And so our vet was, they weren't holistic necessarily. They were a normal animal hospital, but they gave you the choice. And she recommended actually that we not do it to this one cat because she said he probably
has an allergic,
right,
or an allergy to something that's in the vaccine. So to finish out the full thought then, so we have then two indoor cats that have had, they had initial vaccinations when we first got them.
But and booster shots for probably about 5 years.
Right. And they started out on kibble too. So they had kibble for 5 years probably too. And they have nothing but problems.
Right. It really is remarkable the difference. And I mean,
especially Samson right now. And we don't know if Samson, who's our male indoor cat, we're not sure what is going on with him. If it's nerves or if it's the new environment, or he's always been a little neurotic and he's kind of the dumb one of the group, the least likely to survive, we always say, if you know, voted least likely to survive in the wild. But right now he's just having all kinds of problems.
Yeah.
And again, you know, we don't know if it's because of how he was brought up, I guess you would say, and you know how he did have his shots, and he's the one that almost died from having one of the vaccinations. So that's kind of the full background on all the pets. Just as we're going forward, we can talk about those things. And the two, just also the two indoor cats, don't necessarily like raw. If Susie tries to feed them uncooked meat, a lot of times they'll turn their noses up at it and walk away, where Dexter just devours and he's out there crunching on chicken bones and, you know, every other thing. So,
and I've been working because I feed them cooked chicken. So they get cooked chicken. I buy chickens from a local farm and cook them up and they get stewed chicken essentially. But I've been working on cooking the chicken less and less, and I found that if I cook it not very much, I can feed them chicken wings, and they'll kind of eat it and eat some of the bones. They're not really big on the bones like Dexter and the other cat are, but feeding your pet, I think, a more natural diet is, I think it's great, but it has to be something that you're comfortable with. Right. And I know that that's one of those weird things, and you're going to hear it, because all you hear, it's like anything else, all you hear is that, oh, well, these pet foods have been scientifically whatever.
Engineered.
To be premium or like the perfect whole diet or well-rounded diet for your pet. But, I mean, who does all this research? It's all the pet food companies.
Right.
And so,
and what's the motivation of the pet food companies? To make money.
To make money, exactly.
So what are they going to do? Right. For the most part, they're going to use cheap ingredients.
Yeah.
So it's all
byproducts.
Byproducts.
And all the pet food industry, if you read kind of about the history of it, it came about as a way to use up some of the byproducts that weren't used in the food industry, which is not necessarily a bad thing, but when you overprocess all of those things, then like anything else, it can become bad, just like junk food. And I've been reading a lot about that because I've been reading, because we want to transition our chickens, or try to feed our chickens as naturally as possible, which without having to buy the chicken food at the feed store, which is essentially just like, you know, kibble for your chickens. So, I've been reading a lot about that, and, you know, the chicken food, especially one of the places I read said that they have this mix of they need, you know, this much protein, this much this in your chicken feed. And essentially, it's not necessarily always the same. It's just mixed up with whatever byproducts they have the most of at the moment, and they can use as cheaply as possible. So, and I'm sure that pet food is the same too.
Right.
I'm sure that it's not necessarily always that the cheap pet food has. It's not this... It's not that they've got scientists and they're mixing up these batches of food to be perfect. They're just throwing whatever they have left over in there.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. So, I mean, that's kind of the reason we quit doing it. And if you are interested, I would recommend definitely read a lot. And don't feel bad. I think that all the information, most of the information you're going to find is going to be compromised by the pet food industry. So they're going to tell you that feeding your pet
chicken other than kibble
isn't going to be good for it.
Yeah.
And which is just seems ludicrous to me. But that's the same thing as when you start feeding yourself a real food diet. You know, they're always telling you to raw milk is horrible. You know, mm-hmm. You're going to die if you drink raw milk. Don't eat raw eggs. You know, you're going to die if you eat raw eggs. And, you know, you need to eat the super pasteurized, extra cleaned stuff at the grocery store.
Mm-hmm.
And when we found out that that wasn't true and that we were definitely healthier as a result of it, it was kind of a no-brainer to do it for our pets.
Well, and as a caveat in that for us, you know, when it comes to raw milk or eggs or anything, when it comes to anything, make sure it comes from a reputable source.
Oh, yeah. You know? Have to know your farmer
from. Yeah, exactly.
I would never eat a raw egg from the grocery store.
Right.
Or drink raw milk from, like, a CAFO dairy farm.
Right.
There's no
way.
Or
even somebody that you... buying it blind. Someone
exactly,
that you couldn't go out and visit the farm and look at
it. The farms we get milk from, we always go out and walk around and look at the cows and look at what they're doing. So mm-hmm. We feel comfortable drinking the raw milk from there. Because, yeah, it can be dangerous if you're not getting a good quality product. But I mean, think about how you feed yourself.
Mm-hmm.
You don't like calculate out all of the different vitamins and try. You just, if you're eating healthfully, you know, you eat a mix of this and you eat a mix of that. And most people don't fret about, we feed ourselves perfectly well. Most of us, a well-rounded diet. I mean, some people don't, you know, they eat junk all the time, but yet some of the same people are just scared to death to feed their dog because they're afraid that they're not going to feed their dog like a well-rounded diet or whatever.
Right.
When you do it to yourself,
yeah,
and it's okay, you're not going to have any problem doing it to your dog, doing it, you know, for your dog.
Mm-hmm.
And when you decide to do it, do some research, you're going to find it's like anything else.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to find information that tells you feed never give your dog weight bearing bones from big animals like cows, which are like the big marrow bones, which you can buy, which is funny because you can buy those at the pet store to give to your dog, and like the big knuckles and stuff. And some people say, well, only give those as recreational bones and watch your dog when you're giving it to them, you know. And then other people just give it to them. Yeah, they can probably crack your dog's teeth depending on how hard of a chewer your dog is, how much it likes to chew. We give Lucy those kind of bones. I don't have any trouble with it. She chews and chews on them. I think she may have chipped one of her teeth once in her lifetime of raw eating. And since we were feeding her a raw, healthy diet, it healed right up and she didn't have any tooth problems from it. So that's the thing. If your dog's eating healthfully and eating raw, if it does chip a tooth or something, most likely it's going to heal itself back up because mm-hmm. that's the way it is when your body is healthy. It can heal itself. And I mean, just kind of be laid back about it and just do it, I think.
Mm-hmm.
You can't overthink it.
So what would you say, not to jump in, but what would you say are some of the disadvantages? Like what are some of the things that maybe you personally don't like about feeding raw or that, you know, what are some of the disadvantages to it?
It can be slightly less convenient than a kibble. Because you have to admit, buying a bag of food and dumping out a cup of food in the morning and in the evening is pretty convenient and pretty easy to do. Although I don't find feeding raw to be that inconvenient, it's a little more messy,
mm-hmm.
especially in the winter. Generally, we try to feed them outside, which pretty much takes care of it. But yeah, it can be a little more messy. You can sometimes the cats I have to monitor because they have a tendency to steal each other's food when it's the real food, but they don't do it when it's the kibble, which is kind of funny.
That's interesting, yeah.
Because they want the extra food. I think probably one of the biggest problems or the biggest drawbacks to people is going to be finding the food and storing it.
Mm-hmm.
We have, in Ohio, we had one big freezer in the basement. I never found, it would get really full sometimes after I would go pick up 100 pounds of raw meaty bones at the farm and throw them in there. But if you're going to feed raw, it would definitely be handy to buy yourself a big chest freezer or big, standing freezer so that you can buy in bulk and you'll save tons of money. We just picked up 50 chickens from a farm in Ohio when we were back there. They were all the laying hens that she slaughtered to make way for new ones. So I got them for 99 cents a pound for pastured, GMO-free chickens.
Yeah.
Which is amazing. They're small chickens, so I throw one in the sink in the morning or two or the night before, and then one of them goes into a pot to get cooked for our cats that eat poached chicken, and then the other one I put in the sink and I chop up sections in the morning and feed it to the dog and the two cats that eat raw, and in the evening I cut up the rest and it goes to the cats and the dog, and then I put out another chicken the next night. And our dog also, when I first started feeding raw, we did a lot of raw meaty bones, like beef bones, for the dog. We got them out at the farm.
Where we get our milk from.
Milk. A lot of farms end
up... Hi, Mike and Don.
Yeah. A lot of farms end up with a big excess of things that people don't want, like raw meaty bones.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty difficult for them to sell all of the bones that come in an animal. And a lot of the organs, like the tongue and the heart and the liver.
And watching River Cottage, would you say the offal?
The offal, yes.
Nice.
So a lot of times you can get these fairly inexpensively because they have trouble selling them. And these are some of the healthiest things for your dog and for yourself. We eat a lot of liver because it's super healthy. but I would say finding the stuff locally and developing a network of places where you can get stuff from is probably one of the biggest drawbacks, and storing it all. But that's something that's easily, little by little, you can find the different places and keep getting them from them. Most often when you do find a farm, they're more than happy to know someone who's willing to take all of this stuff. So they'll keep contacting you whenever they have anything. I got a bunch of turkeys last year that were the turkeys from the year before. And Lucy didn't care. So I had 5 turkeys, I think. And I got them for, 99 cents a pound for pastured turkeys. So the cats and the dog ate fantastically for a while on the turkey. So, yeah.
And that can also be an advantage to feeding raw, is that a lot of times when, as I've mentioned in previous podcasts, I'm a hunter, and so I'll go out and get a deer, and a lot of times when you get deer processed, you'll get roasts, and you'll get the tenderloin and all these good cuts of meat that are really great to eat, but then you also get, 20, 30 pounds of burger, and, which we do like, but... That's a lot of burger.
If you multiply that by 3 deer, and then you've got 100 pounds of burger in your freezer.
Right, plus all the roasts and
plus
everything
all the
else.
Roasts
so it's
and
not
stuff.
Like, yeah.
I mean, that's a lot. So, yeah, we do feed some of the burger to the dog, too. Yeah. I also like that it's a way to, once again, bring your pet's diet more local as you do with yours,
right?
And you're not giving your money to some big corporation. You're helping out a farmer. Your money's staying in your community. You're building your community, and your dog's getting great food for it.
Well, and like you said, you're helping out the farmer too, because a lot of times you're buying the things that are
that they can't get rid of
easily.
So you're giving them and I want to talk a little bit about when you go out and start reading on the internet. I feel like this podcast is just jumping all over the place.
That's kind of the way we are, though.
I should have come up with a What was that when you would write? Yeah, an outline. Yeah. But when you start reading, you're going to come across tons of information. Feed your dog's grain. Don't feed your dog's grain. Feed your dog's vegetables. Don't feed your dog vegetables. Feed your dog only cooked vegetables. Oh, you should whir your vegetables up in the blender and feed them like liquefied vegetables. You should never feed your dog raw eggs. Oh, you should feed your dog's raw eggs with the shell. You should never give your dog dairy because dogs can't digest dairy. Oh, you should feed your dog raw. I mean, it's just like human. I mean, when you think about when you try to read what you should eat for a healthy lifestyle, you're going to come across hundreds of different theories about what you should eat. And so you need to eat what you think, do some research, and that's going to change over time. We started feeding Lucy a lot of big raw meaty bones when we first started feeding her raw. And then I started doing a lot more reading. And then I decided I wanted to move a little more towards like the whole prey diet. So in addition to the beef bones and the venison that we were already giving her, I wanted to also include a wider variety of animals, including a lot of the smaller animals that she would most likely eat if she were, fending for herself. So we give her squirrels. Brian's a hunter, and he likes to hunt squirrels. So we give her squirrels, and we give her a whole squirrel. We cut the tail off and give her the whole squirrel with the fur and everything. And she eats it. And
that might be another concern that people have, is because the one thing, you've mentioned feeding the animals chicken many times. And people always say, oh, don't feed your dog the chicken bones because they'll splinter and kill them.
Yeah. And that's another one of the things. And then people say, well, you can feed them raw bones, but you can't feed them cooked bones either. Mm-hmm. But I mean, I'll be honest, I feed Lucy cooked chicken bones, and I have for years, but I also grew up in another country where every chicken bone in the country got eaten by a dog, and most of them were cooked, and dogs weren't dropping like flies on the street from eating cooked chicken bones. Mm-hmm. I mean, every chicken bone in that country gets eaten by a dog eventually.
Right.
So, I'm not going to feed her tons of chicken bones, but yeah, she gets cooked chicken bones sometimes, but I feel comfortable feeding that to her. So, figure out what you feel most comfortable with and try a few things and change it up and just, do what works for you. Lucy gets yogurt. Mm-hmm. Every morning, Lucy gets two raw eggs for breakfast and usually some yogurt or some sort of a fermented or a raw dairy product. And she always gets some at night before she goes to bed too. And then usually in the middle afternoon, I'll give her a big raw meaty bone or a big chicken back
and that's the other thing that's interesting about feeding your dogs raw, because when we think about feeding ourselves, like you think about feeding a chicken, usually we take the legs off and we cut the breasts off, mm-hmm. and we take the wings maybe, and then we're left over with this carcass, and a lot of people throw that away. Of course, we make stock out of it, but with the animals, and when you're feeding them raw, we buy chicken backs for Lucy to eat as meals, right. Which is something that we as humans, usually discard or don't do anything with. So it's actually, you get your money's worth from the things that you're buying, whether that be meaty bones, from beef, or whether that be whole chickens that then you segment up and give them to your animal.
And we try to feed a pretty wide variety of things. If I could, I'm hoping I can get my hands on more lamb carcass leftovers up here in Maine, because lamb seems to be a little more prevalent up here than it does in Ohio. I think there are two or three farmers at the market that sell it. And we've talked about raising rabbits, and part of that is specifically just for feeding of the animals, because that's a really natural food source for them. So over the years, our raw feeding has kind of morphed and changed, and we don't do any supplements. Some people recommend that you add supplements and brewer's yeast and all kinds of other stuff to your pet's diet, but we don't. The cats pretty much get meat, and that's it. I do feed Lucy vegetables. Some raw feeding, people say you shouldn't give your dog vegetables. I don't give her raw vegetables. I always cook them. Usually they're sauteed in some lard or some sort of fat, like we cook our own vegetables. So she'll get, you know, she gets the kale stalks. When we eat kale, I chop them up real fine and saute them for, and she loves them.
I was going to say, again, it's a lot of times all the scraps.
Exactly.
That we wouldn't use. Like tonight I peeled apples for my apple crisp, and you know, all those apple peels.
Right.
That's something you can cook up and give to your animal.
And I peeled carrots earlier today, so they went into a pot and they're cooking right now, and the chickens will get some, and the ducks will get some, and the dog will get some. And it's a great way to make use of some of the scraps that you have around too, which is essentially free food for your animals.
Mm-hmm. And that's another advantage to doing this, is that, you know, that could go into a compost pile and that could become, you know, fodder for the garden. But in the same way, it takes an extra step this way, because if we feed it to the chickens and then the, you know, if we can find the chickens to the garden and then the chickens poop on the garden, then
it's a little more efficient. I was called Lucy my compost, my like instant composter.
Right.
Because she got most, I mean, she really does get the majority of scraps, mm-hmm. kitchen scraps. We feed her people food. She mm-hmm. gets our leftover food. If we're eating, we scrape the plates into her bowl. Mm-hmm. We take care to not feed her onions, which aren't good for dogs. She never gets chocolate, raisins, that kind of stuff. You know, there's a list of the things you shouldn't feed your dog because they're poisonous. But, you know, if I make like lasagna and I have a little bit left on my plate, it has some onions in it, and I'll feed her that. I don't really worry about the couple, you know, like the maybe one little bit of onion that'll be in
mm-hmm.
a spoonful of lasagna that I feed her.
But again, if she was in the wild, I mean, she's out there crunching around, and obviously animals are good about knowing what they should be eating and shouldn't be eating. Right. But,
and I believe she's healthy enough that one, you know, that's the thing, is if her immune system is healthy, her body can deal with a little bit of toxicity. Mm-hmm. So, and I want to encourage you to definitely, if you're feeding raw, the only thing I would recommend is that you need to include organ meats in their diet. Mm-hmm. Organ meats are probably the most important thing if you're feeding raw, I believe. Even if you don't want to feed raw, getting organ meats and feeding them to your pets as a treat is going to greatly improve their health. It's going to greatly improve your health if you start eating organ meats. There's a reason that they were viewed as sacred and the most important by most traditional cultures, because they are some of the healthiest foods. So definitely, if you're feeding raw, you need to be at least feeding a certain percentage in organ meats, preferably raw. Lucy loves raw liver more than anything else. I think that's pretty much her favorite food. And you'll find different theories of like percentages, and it can get kind of confusing when you start reading about feeding raw, like you need a 10% organ meats and 40% muscle meat and whatever. I mean, I forget the percentages that I've read, but
since
I don't necessarily follow them, I find it easiest to think about that, which is why I started doing the whole prey model. So think about a chicken. So if that's going to be close to like a duck or a pheasant, say that if the dog was out and running around in the woods, she could catch herself a pheasant or something like that and eat it. So think about a chicken. Think about the organs that are going to be inside the chicken. And that's about the percentage that you need to feed
mm-hmm.
as a part of the diet. And I like to feed that's how I look at the feeding, and it makes the most sense to me. So I'll feed Lucy a couple of chickens a week, and then, you know, a pound of liver, and then I'll give her some beef heart or some venison heart or some venison lungs too, and then I give her a couple of big beef bones to chew on here and there. So it makes it a lot easier if you just think about the whole animal. So say you have the big dog and you're thinking as in the beef or like the deer
I was
category.
Just picturing, because you mentioned chickens, venison, and beef. So I was picturing this like, or you know, two chickens connected together with a you know, venison lung and a beef liver. And
no, but if you think about a cow, so feed as much muscle and bone as there's going to be in a cow, and then as much, you know, liver and heart and all
in
of that stuff.
Yeah,
in proportion, because that's, although if if you kind of watch what animals do in the wild,
right,
they'll often go and eat the organs first.
Yep.
Because they know that that's the most nutritious part of the animal. And if they can't get another meal, that's where they're going to get their most, like, the most dense nourishment mm-hmm. from it. That's why I feed Lucy a higher percentage of organ than most diets recommend or whatever, because I think that's kind of the way it would
be. It's not going to hurt her. I mean,
no. You know, and some people say it might. I don't know. Lucy pretty much thrives, and I try not to overthink it. I mean, I think that's the main thing, is you just can't worry yourself sick. Feeding raw is about managing risk, mm-hmm. I think. And yeah, your dog could choke on a chicken bone. There are plenty of dogs that choke on kibble, and there are plenty of dogs that get that bloat or whatever from kibble too.
Yeah.
So yeah, you know, your dog might swallow a big piece of knuckle hole, but you never know. I think the risks are far greater on processed food than they are when it comes to raw. I mean, there's an inherent risk, I think, in everything.
We've seen that with our animals. I mean, this a lot of our decisions are based on experience, on our experiences. And I mean, with Lucy, if we gave her, well, just like we said in the beginning, we gave her kibble and she had problems. And as soon as we transitioned her to a raw diet, she has had no problems. And in fact, it's helped her, because she did at one point, I think 5 or 6 years ago, she tore her ACL. And, you know, she's always been a little limpy since. We call her the limpy chiote sometimes. You know, that has really helped. The raw food diet has really helped because of all of the, you know, the collagen and all the, right. the different things that she's getting, and eating the bones and eating all the marrow and those types of things.
Right, eating all the cartilage and the chicken. She gets chicken feet as a treat, which have tons of collagen and cartilage in them. And we started feeding her those simply for her joints, because right. we knew, because of some of the medication she'd be given when she was a puppy, we knew that her joints weren't very well. But amazingly, at 11 years old, having torn her ACL 5 years ago, she doesn't limp hardly at all now. No more than she did back 5 years ago.
Only when she runs way too much in one day.
Yeah, and she gets up a little bit slower than she used to. But I mean, it's amazing that she does not have worse arthritis.
Right.
She should have terrible, I mean, prediction. When you read the predictions of what she, like the injury she had, mm-hmm. I mean, most dogs would have trouble walking by now. Their mm-hmm. arthritis would be so bad. And I believe that, I mean, all the chicken feet, and we really do kind of, that's one of the reasons I feed a higher percentage of organ meats to her, and a lot of collagen rich. So she gets a lot of beef knuckles to chew on. I make stock for her too. I'll take a lot of the big beef knuckles and stuff and make a really like gelatinous stock, and give her a little bit of stock every day to help her joints. But yeah, I mean, we've seen a huge, it's amazing the difference. And a lot of people are amazed when we tell people that she's 11 years old, because she just does not act like an 11-year-old dog at all, I don't think.
Yeah. She's starting to get a little gray around the muzzle, but other than that, you really can't tell.
Yeah.
I mean, she's still,
right.
And she still has bouts of craziness and acts like a puppy too.
Right. Yep.
So,
and there, I want to talk a little bit about the things you'll notice when you start feeding raw. You'll notice fewer skin problems, hot spots. Lucy has not had a hot spot since we started feeding her raw, except for when she gets into like chicken food, or if she, I forget what she got. She got into something else once. I can't remember.
Was it another animal food?
With corn. It may have been like some cat food somewhere or something. But yeah, no hot spots. If your dog has hot spots, definitely I would highly recommend going towards a whole food, real food diet for them.
And if you don't if you have a dog and don't know what a hot spot is, consider yourself very lucky, because they are a nasty business.
But yeah, I mean, her skin, amazing. Her coat, shiny. Her eyes, clear. Her ears, she doesn't get ear infections like she used to. I mean, it's the way she looks. She's energetic. She's healthy. She looks good. She's slim. She has a thyroid problem, but we don't have to worry about managing her weight, because the raw diet really helps with that.
Mm-hmm.
Another amazing thing about the, which I find this completely remarkable, and I'd read about this before I started feeding raw, but when you feed animals raw, their poop doesn't stink. I mean, it's completely...
This is amazing, the difference between when they're eating raw, especially the cats.
Because the litter box is inside.
Yeah.
So when they eat kibble, like when we go away, we just leave kibble out and a neighbor comes up and gives them kibble.
Just for ease.
I mean, it's just awful to clean the litter box when we get home.
And even for a couple days afterwards, we're transitioning them back to
raw. But then when you feed them real food, it doesn't stink.
No, at all.
And there's a lot less of it because there's not, I mean, kibble and those kinds of food, there's a lot of filler and corn and fiber and all kinds of stuff
to take up mass because
it's cheap. And like you can get a 50-pound bag of kibble. If it's 25 pounds of like fiber and extra junk that they don't need, that's 25 pounds of stuff you're buying that you don't need to buy. So definitely there's a lot less poop and it doesn't stink and it's completely different. Like in the yard, Lucy's poop turns chalky after a day and then just kind of
disintegrates
and goes into the ground. I mean, it's remarkable. And that right there should tell you something as well, I think.
Well, their bodies can pull out all of the nutrients out of the food, and there is no filler and no weirdness. But, you know, the interesting thing is that the same thing happened to us. Not to be gross and get into weird topics of discussion, but we were talking about this, and actually you were talking about it with one of your friends this week, about how now that we've transitioned to a completely real food diet, whenever we, go out to eat and, sometimes we'll treat ourselves to something, and it's a treat when you're eating it sometimes, but then the next day it's not a treat at all because, man, your stomach's just your intestines are rumbling and bad things are happening and I have to tell Susie, you might not want to come over here right now.
Yeah. It's amazing. It's amazing how your body kind of evens out and you don't realize how miserable you were before.
Right.
And
how your body has to fight against all of those weird things that are in processed products.
Yeah.
You know, that they put in for preservation or for
flavor enhancement.
Color enhancement. It's
and
like, why does something need to be enhanced when, naturally it should be good by itself? So... Yeah, but it's interesting how we even see that.
Yep.
I was going to make a joke, but I won't.
Right, yeah.
Keep it above board. So, yeah.
Let me think about some of the questions people always ask me when I say about feeding raw. People say, does it cost more? Actually, no, I don't find that it costs any more than buying a... I mean, we were buying good kibble before, and I don't think good kibble is any more expensive than cheap kibble. Granted, you don't want to be going to the store and buying, no offense if you feed like Eukanuba or one of those brands. Those kinds of premium kibbles I don't think are necessarily premium kibbles. But if you're feeding like Wellness or Evo or one of those brands, which if you're going to feed kibble, I'd recommend switching to one of those brands. No, it's not any more expensive.
You have to consider, too, the full cost because...
Exactly. I mean, when you consider the fact that we have not had any vet...
Had to take her in to get this checked out or that checked out, or she's had a sickness or she has hot spots that we can't take care of ourselves or this or that. I mean,
it saves you a fortune on any kind of vet problems.
I was trying to think of the last time we took her to the vet for anything like that. And I can't even think of...
Probably 5 years.
Yeah.
Besides, like...
So you have to factor that in.
Right.
Plus, just the quality of life. I mean, how do you put a price on that?
Well, and also longevity, because we've been looking at other dogs. We've been looking at perhaps getting another dog or two as, like, a farm dog. And we've been looking at breeds and discussing it. And we've thought about... rescuing, which the funny thing is because we feed raw and we have different ideas on you know, pet vaccinations and stuff. We can't, we're not fit parents to adopt to rescue an animal. So pretty much we have to buy from a breeder. And I've been reading and doing some research, and I found...
And even from a breeder that has the same ideas that we do.
Right, and that's the thing, is I don't want to buy a dog from someone who just feeds their dog, you know, crap kibble. So I've been reading, and I should put a link in the show notes in case anyone is interested. I found a website that has a compilation of breeders that follow more natural methods. A lot of them feed raw. A lot of them do minimal vaccination or no vaccination. And so we did some research, and I found a breeder in Ohio that sells Anatolian Shepherds, which is one of the dogs we've been looking at. And feed raw, minimal vaccination or no vaccination, no flea and tick treatments, no worming, none of that kind of stuff. Or they use homeopathic versions of those things, which you can also get. And it's amazing because these dogs will live almost twice as long as the expected life expectancy for that's normal for these breeds.
Yeah.
So I was looking at I looked at some Newfoundlands, and their dogs regularly live to 16 to 19 years old, which is amazing for a Newfoundland.
That's
and for
amazing
a bigger
for
dog.
Any dog. Yeah.
And I've read that about German Shepherds, too, that a lot of the police ones that are trained, like heavily trained, get raw diets because they live longer and they can be in service longer. So you get more for your investment.
Right.
So definitely, I mean, a quality of life issue for your dog and longevity. If you're buying a breed and spending the money and investing, or someone like us where we're thinking about investing in a dog that's going to cost us money and we're going to work hard training it to do a specific job, I don't want to replace that dog in 7 years. You know, I would be more than happy if that dog lived to 16,
right?
You know, or, you know, 14, as opposed to the 9 to 10 or whatever that a lot of these bigger breeds, you know, their life expectancy is. So in terms of investment, especially if you're buying a dog, that's another great reason to do it as well.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I mean, and once I started reading about all of these breeders that do it and how healthy their dogs are, I think, yeah, I mean, I definitely want to, because I know some of Lucy's problems are probably we got her at the pound. Who knows what kind of shape her mother was in or what she was fed when she was pregnant, all of that kind of stuff, which contributes to overall health and in the future.
Mm-hmm.
So
what's another question that people ask you all the time?
Some people ask if it's messy, because that's raw food. And generally, I just check the food outside, even in the winter. I mean, Lucy's more than happy. A dog is a dog. They don't feel the cold like we do. So, I mean, I throw her outside with a bone. She'll sit out there for an hour eating it, and then she'll come back in. The cat's the same way. Sometimes, you know, if you want to feed them inside, do it on the linoleum and wipe it up, or throw down a towel. We trained Lucy early on to eat on a towel, like if we'd give her a bone or something. So I can put down a bone in the living room, or put down a towel and throw a bone on it, and she'll keep it on the towel and eat on the towel. So, I mean, that's something else you can train your dogs to do if you want to feed them inside. So, no, it's not messy. I haven't found it to be more expensive. I haven't found it to be messy. I haven't found it to be more difficult. If you're worried about it, like if you don't don't want to handle raw meat, or I have a friend who's a vegetarian, and I've talked to her about feeding her pets, you know, raw. And she said, oh, yeah, she said, I would love to. She said, I know it would be healthier for them. I just really have an issue with dealing with the raw meat and, you know, trying to come up with the whole, like, I need to cut it up and portion it out and feed them this day. And she said, I just really don't want to think about that. Well, and here I found there's a local poultry place here. And they're not like organic or GMO free. They have a decent product as far as a semi, you know, it's not necessarily like a CAFO confined place, you know. Mm-hmm. It's the best of the worst, probably, I would say.
Yeah.
But, you know, I do buy some of their chicken backs and necks for the cats, because it's a local product. I'm helping them get rid of the the excess that they have. It's a good source, and it's a great source now until I can find other sources of meat. And I'd rather feed them that than kibble, because I believe even raw, like, food like that is going to be healthier than a kibble, mm-hmm. Even if it is not the best meat in the world. So
you're talking about
and this place, that, yeah. And then I was at the farmer's market, and lo and behold, this place sells pet patties. So it's ground chicken and ground bone, and they have it all frozen up in little like hamburger patties that you can give your dog. And I forget the size, but yeah, so you can buy them already done like that. I don't know how much they are. I've always just, I prefer to do the whole chicken neck or the back or whatever. I prefer to do the whole raw thing. Like, I'm not much
in
one
its
to,
natural state.
In its natural state. But, you know, if you're not comfortable with that, a ground option is like this would be better. And mm-hmm. so I mentioned it to my friend, and this place is kind of down more close to her. She also lives in Maine. And she said, you know, that's probably something I could get into if I wanted to, because, you know, she's helping out a local company. It's easy because they come frozen. So she would just pull them out in the morning, thaw them on a plate, and then feed them to her dogs.
And she could just think of it like a soy burger.
Exactly. And she doesn't have to handle and cut up raw meat. It's, right. You know, it's just, and some people, that's worth it to them.
Yeah.
And there are companies that sell raw food diets. You know, if you happen to end up at a vet, like say you go to the vet and you tell your vet that you're doing this, and they just go through the roof saying you're gonna kill your dog, you probably should just try to find a new vet. There are enough holistic and more natural vets out there that you should be able to find one within a decent drive from you. I know we took Dexter to this one vet by us. We loved our vet. They weren't holistic or natural, but she kind of was. Mm-hmm. Like when Lucy tore her ACL, she said, well, a lot of places will tell you to get a surgery, but I generally like to just see, you know, let the dogs kind of heal on their own. So, you know, and she thought it was great when we were started feeding Lucy raw and that kind of stuff. So, but we did take Dexter to this one vet once, and they sold raw right there in the pet store. And yeah, these places can be great sources of information as well. Not only do they encourage you then in your choices, they're not kind of demeaning, or it's not demoralizing to go to the vet because they're telling you that you're going to kill your pet. It's important not only to support those people in their efforts, because that's probably a lot more difficult than being a regular vet. And
well, plus
it's good
to
have a supportive community, and right, they might be a great source of information,
exactly,
for,
yeah,
local raw food. And they would be a great resource to help you maybe feel a little bit better about doing it if you're worried about making that transition. I know when we took our cat Dexter to this therapist once. We won't get into that, but
that's a story for another day.
That is a story for another day. But she had Australian Shepherds that she did agility training with, you know, and would take them and do shows and competitions and that kind of stuff. And she fed her dogs raw. And she actually had gotten into contact or gotten in with a bunch of the local small deer processors. So not like the larger butcher shops that do it, but, you know, the guys who do it in their garage who process deer. Mm-hmm. She had gotten in with a bunch of those guys. So during deer season, she would go in and pick up all the ears and just all of the extra stuff and bones that the people didn't want. And any of the livers and the organs or any of that stuff that wasn't used or given back to the customer that the customer didn't want, she got all of that stuff and would throw it in the freezer and then feed it to her dogs throughout the year. So, I mean, that's another great source. You can get on, a lot of states have like a roadkill list, and that's kind of sounds terrible, but like if a deer is hit on the highway or on the road, it seems ridiculous for that to go to waste.
Right.
Sometimes a lot of states have like a call list or whatever. And I know a couple of my friends that are on those lists. And so they get venison for their dogs that way.
and you would have to process that yourself.
Right.
Because basically you're going out and picking up the deer on the side of the road, and
right.
speaking of messy,
right.
sometimes that can be, but sometimes the deer are hit, they're struck in such a way that they're, you know, they're completely intact and everything's
right.
the way it should be. And so, but then you do have to process that yourself.
Right.
So that
right.
is
and
a little bit extra
work. And my
friends
do that,
but,
yeah.
But then that's free
they
as well.
They process it, and they actually keep the good meat for themselves, and then they feed, you know, the scraps and
yeah.
Any of the stuff that's bruised and stuff to their collies. So, yeah. So,
well,
I mean, that's
tell
another,
the story about,
that's another
isn't
great...
that the friend that has the pictures of...
had pictures of her dogs on her blog, yeah. like playing tug of war with a deer leg. Like an entire haired deer leg.
Awesome.
She, of course, warned her audience at the beginning of the post. And, of course, they're, you know, collies, so they're fluffy, beautiful dogs.
Lassie, where's Timmy? Oh, you're eating a deer leg. Oh.
But, yeah, I mean, that's another great source as well. And I have a friend out in Oregon, and she... she's in the kind of into the farm local food community, and anyone who has, you know, chickens that they don't want, old layers, they don't want them. They don't want to slaughter them themselves. They'll call her. She'll come grab them. And then she processes them and feeds them to her little corgi. And she, I think she got a deer or a fawn that was hit on the road too. Not too long ago, she was saying, and, she's gotten goats, I think, a couple of goats and that kind of stuff. All from local people who just don't want them anymore. And she's willing to go get them and process that herself. So
that's kind of the gamut of feeding raw, is going from a place that'll prepare the patties for you of the ground meat and
yeah.
bones, all the way to what we do, which is, you know, buying typically... meat the way you would buy it for yourself. So processed chickens,
right.
you know.
Whole chickens.
Yeah, whole chickens that you'd throw in a roasting pot, all the way to, you know, getting the animals whole and processing that yourself and cutting the meat for your
animals. And that's definitely the way to save the most money if you're
yeah.
willing to do that.
Yeah. Yeah, because that could be free if you get on one of those lists mm-hmm. with the State Highway Patrol. I mean, because again, you can use almost all of the animal.
Right.
So,
I mean,
you know,
so
you get a 150
deer,
pound
right.
deer that you can, I mean, that would feed your dog for quite a while.
Right. Our dog eats about a pound of meat and bones a day. So, I mean, that would feed her for almost half the year.
Yeah.
For completely free with, you know, a couple hours of your time.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause it's not like you need to process it for human consumption. You just cut it up into 1 pound chunks, or, you know, whatever size dog you have. The general consensus is 2-3% of the adult weight. Even if it's a puppy, you don't feed their weight, you feed the adult weight as a puppy. So it's 2-3% of the body.
And what we do mainly with Lucy, as far as we just keep an eye on her and
yeah.
how she looks. A lot of people say that she looks skinny, but I think the problem is that
most dogs are
overweight, because you should be able to see a dog's ribs
slightly,
barely. Right. I mean, it shouldn't be emaciated and looking
yeah.
terrible, but dogs should be skinny. And when you look at them from the top, they should have kind of an hourglass where their chest curves back down into their waist and then back out into their hips.
And it depends on the dog. I mean, Lucy's
right.
lab, but she's also got some hound in her. So she's going to be trimmer than like a full-blooded lab
mm-hmm.
Because she has more of the sleek hound qualities. So yeah, I mean, learn what a healthy dog looks like. And we typically try to keep her at a fairly low weight, partly because she did have knee. I mean,
right.
she blew out her ACL. So,
and
if she does
dogs
have
can
arthritis... you know, we don't want her to be carrying too much weight.
Right.
So she kind of fluctuates right on that level. Like there are times when I think, oh, she's looking a little too skinny. I need to feed her. You know, at that point, I usually put an extra, I start feeding her a little bit of lard and a couple extra eggs or something like that. And then she plumps right up again. But
having your dog skinny in general is a good thing, because
they
overweight
tend to
dogs,
live longer. Studies show if
right.
you keep your
and they
dog
can have
on
back
the thin
problems,
side.
Hip
right.
problems, knee problems. I mean, it can really cause a ton of things. So, But Lucy is...
that's the easiest way, is to kind of use that rule of thumb, 2 to 3%, and then just watch them. If they look skinny, feed them a little more. If they start looking chunky, feed them a little bit less. Yeah, it's not... I mean, it depends on your dog and their... the level of activity. And you may find that once you start feeding raw or whole food, your dog has more energy and becomes more active and then does need a little bit more food. Mm-hmm. Because that's definitely something we noticed with our dog. I mean, and we even noticed the difference between certain foods that we feed her. When we started feeding her whole squirrels, we noticed that she definitely had, like, we would notice a lot more energy after eating a squirrel than eating, say, a big beef bone. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of interesting, too.
It's kind of funny, too, because, well, I don't know. It's kind of a funny story. When we first started feeding our squirrels, I would still fully process it, field dress it as if we were going to cook it for a meal for us. So I would take the skin off and cut the head off and all those different things. And then one time as I was cleaning a squirrel for her and she's standing there kind of watching me knowing what I'm doing, I had the head that I had taken off. And so I just kind of chucked it to her to see what would happen. And she ate it right down, just crunched right through it.
Oh, she loves them.
It was hilarious.
It's one of her favorite things.
It was hilarious to see her, you know, with this squirrel head hanging out of her mouth. Again, for vegetarians in the audience, you probably have stopped listening a long time ago. But sorry for that visual.
Yeah.
But yeah. So now I barely clean them. I mean, I'll just take the sort of the guts out and then just give her the rest because she can eat a lot of the organs and that sort of thing. So it actually made it a lot easier for the processing that way.
Yeah.
So. Yeah, so have we covered that topic?
I'm sure we'll get lots of questions about it. Everybody always has lots of questions. And I think the key is to, and the thing is it's hard. It's just so alien to what we're used to and what we've been told.
And there's not a lot of...
And the thing is I think that it's super easy to just overthink it.
Yeah.
I mean...
You can just buy your dog some hamburger and give it some hamburger.
Start giving a little bit of hamburger here. I mean, some places will even tell you not to give your dog hamburger.
Right.
You know, and some people worry about the salmonella and that kind of stuff. But dogs and cats, their intestines aren't like ours. So, I mean,
dogs eat roadkill. It has been laying there for weeks.
And some dogs, don't be surprised. Lucy, sometimes I'll give her, you know, a beef shank. Mm-hmm. And she won't eat it one day because she won't want to. She'll leave that thing in the yard for 3 days until it's kind of gross, and then that's the day she wants to eat it.
Yeah.
I mean, we all know the cartoons about dogs burying bones and then digging them up and eating them. They do that.
Yeah.
And I think that it's almost like a natural fermentation, which makes it more digestible towards them. Yeah, they do. I mean, and as a human, of course, that's kind of gross, but it's extremely natural to her. I mean, she loves vegetables from the compost pile more than anything else. Yeah. So, you know, I mean, yeah.
She likes a little probiotic.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. She loves rabbit poop, which we call Lucy M&M's. Another little tasty. I mean, and that's where dogs can get some greens and that's where they get other vitamins and minerals, too. Because if you think about it, rabbit poop is essentially grass that's been kind of fermented and turned into silage and broken down by going through an animal's digestive system. And there's a reason dogs eat it. It's not like... they just do it because they're gross. I mean, I think it's instinct. I mean, they are kind of gross sometimes.
They are gross.
But I think it's instinct for them to do that because it's part of their natural diet.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I'm sure we'll get tons of questions. But my biggest advice is just don't overthink it.
And ask away. I mean, ask. One of the things that I've really been enjoying about the blog recently is that it's almost turning into kind of an interactive community forum sort of thing where I noticed on, I think it was 2 days ago, some of the comments that people were sharing stories and different things, and then other people were commenting on those comments saying, you know, thanks for sharing that story. That was great. And I just thought that was awesome. So definitely, if you have any questions, if you have any comments, if you're feeding raw or thinking about it, come over and leave a comment in the show notes. And, you know, we'll try to answer the best that we can. Or if somebody else has an answer, you know, that's great. And we'd love to hear other people's stories about how you're feeding raw or how you're feeding real food, and how you got started in it. So, you know, please come over and leave a question or a comment, and that would be great. And that, I think that helps other people out too, because I think it's like anything. Once you do something for a while, you forget all of the initial concerns and questions that you had, and it just kind of becomes second nature. So it does help when people ask us questions about things that we talk about, and we can sort of revisit those and remember what it was like early on. So yeah, we'd love to hear your questions and comments. So we're going to move on to Around the Run, because we have been doing a few things this week. In fact, why not, while I'm sort of discussing this and talking about what I've done, why don't you go turn on the outside light and see if we have any of that white stuff on the ground? I doubt it too. Because right now we are under a winter weather advise. Oh, is there snow? It's snowing like crazy. The grass is almost covered. That's great, because an hour ago I looked and there was nothing. We're under a winter weather advisory, where we're supposed to get 3 to 6 inches of snow. And up to this point, we've really been having trouble getting into the Christmas spirit, because the weather's been warm and it's been nice and sunny.
And I think that the fact that we've been so busy with the move, and I mean, the first week of December, we had our second huge load of moving stuff up. Like the big moving truck, I moved our stuff up here. So then we just have, I mean, the garage is completely full of just boxes of stuff and stuff that needs kind of organized and moved around and put in its proper place. And we need to figure out where we want to put everything. Cause I mean, you have to figure out how you're going to live here to do it. And like the back porch, we moved all the stuff from the back porch there. So we've been unloading boxes and unpacking and all of that. And it's really hard to get in the Christmas spirit when every waking moment you're either working or unpacking a box, or, you know, trying to catch up on stuff and
or trying
clean
to sell your
or,
house or
yeah. I mean, it's just
and all the forms and
so last
stuff
it was
that
last
along with that.
What day was it? Tuesday. This past Tuesday. It was just this past Tuesday that we went out and got our tree.
Yeah, we went out and we wanted to get a Christmas tree, and so we decided instead of going out to a Christmas tree farm, which there are plenty of around here,
and buying the perfect tree, of course, that's been pruned.
Yeah, pruned.
We wanted to get a wild Christmas tree, as we've seen some signs out here for wild Christmas trees for sale, which is just awesome.
Yeah, we saw one. My favorite sign was wild Christmas trees, cut your own. Locally grown. Okay. It's like, no kidding. So yeah, we wanted to get, you know, we have plenty of land here and plenty of trees. And so we thought we could go out and find a Christmas tree. And so we went out and, took the four wheeler out and the new chainsaw, and I got to run my new chainsaw for, you know, 30 seconds
to cut down a little tree.
To cut down a little tree, and the tree looked a lot bigger when I was standing beside it. But I think I was standing in a ditch or something.
And I think you cut the stump a little short because you left a good amount on the ground.
Maybe I did. I don't know.
But anyway,
it was the new chainsaw. It was crazy. It was so powerful and sharp. The new old used chainsaw, actually, but that's another story.
New to you.
New to me. So yeah, we have this. And it was a beautiful full Christmas tree until we got it inside, and then we realized there was a couple big holes on one side.
And it's kind of lopsided, and you probably saw pictures.
Yeah, there are pictures on the blog.
But
we got it decorated up.
I threw one strand of the C7 lights on it, which are my favorite. They're like those the big lights, but not the really big ones. Yeah. One strand of that, so there are 25 lights on it.
And
I don't know, probably about 20 clear glass, etched glass balls.
Yeah.
And then a grapevine star on the top. And it took me like 15 minutes to decorate the tree, which was perfect.
And it looks really great.
It does look great. It's a cute little Christmas tree.
Yeah.
It's got lots of character.
And
it was free.
Lots of presents underneath it.
Yeah. This is our biggest present year ever, we've discovered or rediscussed.
Which, the funny thing about us and presents is that we normally buy each other things that we really, really need, but we just can't bring
ourselves to buy.
You know, individually, we can't bring ourselves to spend the money on ourselves to buy the thing. And so, yeah, Christmas morning is like, it's a very practical Christmas morning.
Yes, it is. Like, oh, great, I got a enameled cast iron pan.
Yeah, it's, not practicality to the point of like wrapping up rolls of toilet paper. No. But yeah, we buy things that we're definitely
but
going
socks
to use.
Are definitely unwrapped, I think, every single year in this household.
Oh, hopefully you bought me some because I forgot to buy you some.
Really?
This
I thought
year.
You were going to buy me some Pilsen socks.
Oh, man. Totally forgot.
That's all right.
Well, okay. But yeah, and then along with getting our Christmas tree, we've just been prepping for winter, just getting, you know, everything done around the house. Literally around the house that needed done. Today I put the snow tires on the Mini, and along with this house we got an old pickup truck that has a snow plow on it, so I got the chains out and kind of couldn't figure out how to put those on, so I'm gonna have to call the guy I got the truck off of and figure that out. But and then just getting everything put away that we kind of had sitting around that we've been unpacking.
Chicken water heater out and going. I had another water on there and it wasn't keeping the water as thawed as I would like. So I put a metal one out there because I've read that works better with these little heaters. So we'll see how that works. And if that doesn't work, then
and
maybe the heater's broken.
It definitely started to get colder. Last night, I think it got down to 12 degrees. Which is unseasonably cold for this time of year in Maine, from what I've read about and found out. But it was definitely cold, so we've been just trying to figure out all those different things that you need to do when it starts getting that cold for plants and also for the animals that we now have. Kind of a funny story to go along with that. The ducks are still living in the garage. We have an extra room off the side of our garage. And when we went on not a vacation. When we went back to Ohio the last time, we just decided to put the ducks in the garage just for ease. And we didn't have time to
keep them safe.
Right. We didn't have time to build a house for them or to train them on an electric fence. So we just put them into that room and we put a bunch of pine shavings on the ground, and it's a pretty set up little,
it's posh.
It's very posh. It's duck posh.
For some ducks. Yeah, it is. They've got like a little fence in there, and there's a wood the fence keeps them away from the little like wood burner that's in there, which is unhooked. It's not on or working, but
But just to keep them away from it so that they don't.
A big entertainment center in that the previous owners kind of moved up there and left. And I go up there every now and then and find them perched on one of the lower shelves, like sleeping.
Of the entertainment center?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, so it's a huge room.
So the funny thing is, though, that during the day, we've just been opening up the door, which goes to the outside. And so they come, you know, waddling out, and they run around and they
eat grass
follow
me
and different things, and they're hilarious. They you know, getting your ducks in a row, that phrase,
yes,
is
it comes from
ducks walking in a row. It's hilarious. So yeah, you'll see Susie walk by the window and
here come seven ducks
come walking by. But so we leave that door open. Well, the chickens have found out that
the ducks have it better than they do.
Yeah, and so they've been hanging out in the garage as well.
So so it's funny because until we put the ducks in there, the chickens just always ran around the yard. They would spend all day running around the yard, you know, eating grass and bugs and whatever they can find. And then we have like a back porch, and they love to kind of hang out and sleep under the back porch whenever they need a nap during the day. But of course, once they figured out that the ducks have this great, awesome room on the garage, now they get out of there, we let them out of the coop in the morning, and they make a beeline up there and go into the duck room, and they spend all day in the duck room hanging out in there. Because obviously, you know, the grass is always greener on the other side of the fence, and the other coop is always nicer than yours. But
and there's really nothing in there for them to do, so they just go in there and scratch around in the pine shavings.
And then they lay in the sun in the doorway.
Yeah. And which it's funny the ducks do also.
When they first started going in there, the ducks were still pretty small. And so the chickens would peck at the ducks and run them off. But now the ducks are getting really huge. And so now the ducks, like, bully the chickens, which is funny. So the other day I was in there, and the ducks actually chased all the chickens out of their room, which was really hilarious because they kind of, like, the males will kind of, like, hiss at the chickens. So, and they'll like grab their butt feathers, kind of like when the chicken's running away, they'll reach out and like goose them.
They duck them?
Or chicken them or whatever. Yeah, they just like, grab that little tuft of feathers on their like thighs or their butt or whatever. They just saw the chicken, but, and then the chickens go, and then they go running off. So it's hilarious. It's hilarious to watch, like, the interaction of the different animals, because the chickens just ignored the ducks when they were ducklings. But, oh, it's just really too funny sometimes.
We don't need TV. We have ducks and chickens, so.
Yeah.
And that kind of leads us on talking about the ducks and the chickens. It was a small fail of the week this week, which I don't have my sound effects because it was way too cold to run out and get the cable out of the car that I need to hook up the iPad for sound effects. So, yeah, so where did we go that we came up late that night?
Anyway. Oh, it was, I don't remember.
We were going somewhere.
Oh, it was Sunday. We went to see Scrooge in the theater.
Oh, that's right. That's right. We took in a show. Some of our friends were, or our friend and their children, kids were playing in Scrooge. And so we thought to get in the holiday spirit, we'd go see that. And we didn't think we'd be back very late, so we just left the chickens and the ducks roam, you know, and left the doors open,
right,
to the coop
and
to their
back
to the ducks' room.
It was gonna be like 5,
yeah,
so half hour after dark,
yeah. So we figured no problem,
we'll just
close up the doors because they just wander back into their places at night. So we go in to check on the ducks first, and there was a chicken laying on top of the, we have a little cardboard house with a heat lamp on it for the ducks. And there was a chicken laying on top of that, and I thought, well, that's the oddest thing I've ever seen.
We're like, she must have just decided to stay in here instead of going back to her own coop.
That's weird. And so then we go outside, and I always carry a flashlight with me, so I got out my flashlight because it was just starting to get dark, and I shined it around, and here on top of the pickup truck on the hood, there was another chicken laying there. And I thought, well, that's really weird. What is going on? So then I went kind of briskly walking over to the chicken coop to see what was going on. Well, here the there's like a water pan that we put in front of their door to hold it open.
Because there's a coop and then there's a run attached to the coop. Like, and it's, the run is completely enclosed with chicken wire and it has a door in the run. Mm-hmm. So we prop the door in the morning. We go out, open the door of the run and prop it open with like this. Some old dish that the previous owners left there, which probably that's what they used it for too.
Right. Which it got pushed out of the way and the door closed.
Yeah.
So then the chickens couldn't get back into the run and therefore
into the coop.
So then we started looking around because we're like, great, there were no chickens in the coop whatsoever, which means they were all out and it was dark at that point. Now, a couple interesting things happened. One, we have 8 chickens. I found 6 of them eventually.
2 of them were sitting on the front steps of the coop, which is kind of around to the front door. So mm-hmm. I opened up the front door and kind of shoveled them in.
Mm-hmm. And then we found the one that was in the duck room.
I found one in the pine tree and took her back to
the
coop.
There was one on top of the truck. And then there was one I found by, we leave a side window open to the garage for the outdoor cat, the Sweets, to go in and out of the garage because she sleeps upstairs. And there was one sitting right on that ladder. Now, I think we couldn't find the other two. I looked all over the place, and an interesting thing happened when I was looking. I was shining my flashlight around, and down over our hill, our driveway is quite long, and there's a clearing that goes down to the bottom of it. So probably about 125 yards, 150 yards away, my flashlight came across a set of eyes looking at me, and they were both forward-facing eyes, which typically means a predator. So we're either thinking it was a coyote. It was probably a coyote, and there were 2 sets of eyes, so that kind of freaked me out, especially since I had Lucy out there with me. So I took her inside real quick and came back out, took Susie out there to show her, and they were still there.
Mm-hmm.
So that was interesting. Yeah. That was fun.
And then we were like, great. So two of our chickens are out here now.
Right.
Braving the elements. And of course,
there's
that
coyotes
night,
right down there.
And that night there was a storm blowing through. So there was going to be freezing rain and all kinds of stuff, which.
But I think that based on evidence that I found in the garage, I think that the other two chickens actually got into that window that the cat uses and slept in the garage somewhere. Because the next morning,
they were both outside of the coop waiting.
And so we let them in and they ran in and then
came back out.
Went into the duck house and hung out all day with the ducks. So that was our week this week. We had just another crazy busy week. We're really hoping that things can slow down a little bit here. We've got a lot of snow coming, and so we're thinking for the next couple of days we're probably not going to be able to go anywhere. We'll see what happens, And winter has begun, and we've had Christmas music playing throughout the day, and we're really just kind of starting to
get in the spirit of it.
And so
ready to watch some James Bond.
That's right, and eat some apple crisp with brandied
raisins,
which I'm.
You need to put a link to the recipe in the show notes. Okay.
I will. That's and I'm gonna.
I'm not a big fan of cooked apples, so.
And that kind of brings us on to the book of the week this week. Susie recommended a couple books for me to look at, and so I'm just going to put them in.
Now that he's a budding chef.
Now that I've made one thing, so I'm a budding chef. Good to the Grain, which is
It's a fantastic book about incorporating different kinds of grains into your diet. So if you're interested in moving away from using all-purpose flour for everything that you bake, I mean, using barley flour or rye or even using freshly ground whole wheat, you're going to find that adds just a whole another layer of flavor. And it's not your grandmother's whole wheat. It's not the bitter, like, whole grain flour that you've find at the grocery store, because that stuff's usually rancid, which is why it's bitter. But yeah, I mean, this using millet flour, and it's a great book if you want to look into incorporating other grains into your diet. If you follow nourishing traditions, most of them you can just soak overnight in order to use them. But yeah, I mean, it's an interesting cookbook. It's got lots of great recipes in it and lots of great ways to use all those crazy grains you've never wanted to use because they're just too intimidating, like kamut.
Kamut.
Kamut. Or however you pronounce it.
What are you calling me? A kamut? That sounds very...
Or spelt, or, you know, all that Yiddish stuff that you hear about and you just never know how to use it.
Quit being such a kamut. The other book is Rustic Fruit Desserts, which this has one of our favorite recipes in it, which is pandowdy. If you've never had pandowdy, then you seriously need to have one.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
Basically,
it's essentially a pie that you don't bake in a pie. You don't put it in a pie crust, so the crust isn't on the bottom.
Yeah.
What you do is you cook it like in a cast.
The crust on the bottom on the pie usually gets soggy and weird. So yeah,
pandowdy is essentially, I always cook mine in a cast iron skillet because, you know, I'm a cast iron skillet person. So you put your fruit and stuff in the cast iron skillet, and then essentially you make the pot. It's kind of like a pie crust, and then you put that on the top, and then you bake it.
So it gets all crispy
and
nice.
And it's a little bit thicker, and it's kind of crispy and flaky, and then it's nice.
Yeah, it's just really, really good. If you like pie, you will love pandowdy. Yeah,
and it's a little different than pie crust. The topping for it slightly different, but really good.
Usually, we eat that, of course, with a scoop of ice cream, and just it is just unbelievable. So we'll put links to those books in the show notes, and those would definitely make good gifts as well. And like we said, you know, if you want to buy anything, and if you're going to get it through Amazon, especially, use our Amazon affiliate link. Also, we have the Clarington Forge link now that we get a few dollars off of. If you want to buy really quality garden tools, then get them from Clarington Forge. They're just excellent tools, really good quality, and we make a couple dollars off of it also. And then also the Mountain Rose Herbs link, if you want to get, man, we have so much stuff from Mountain Rose Herbs. It's just, it's unbelievable the amount of things we have.
All of our tea and herbs and spices are from them.
Yeah. We have, what, 4 shelves that are just full.
And spices and seaweed and different kinds of salt and...
The great thing about Mountain Rose Herbs, too, and this is one of those weird things that you'd never think about, but it's funny when you point it out. Their labels come off their bags really easily.
Oh,
and
yeah.
So we save all of our glass jars, like when we get coconut oil or something
all
else.
All my coconut oil from Tropical Traditions, which is where I get it from. And their jars are perfect because they're flat-sided, unlike a lot of jars that you get. So I save all those jars, and it's like a small celebration when I empty out a coconut jar, because then I'm like, nice, now I have another spice jar, because then, you know, I've got some spices that I don't have glass jars for. So then I go into the pantry, and the label peels right off of the bag, and you throw it on the Tropical Traditions jar, and you put the spices in there, and you're good to go. And
yeah, so we have about 4 shelves of...
Full of just...
Yeah, just different spices
and herbs.
And
a lot of our toiletries are from them. We love their face oil and their face scrub. And, you know, if you're looking for great non-toxic products, I need to do a post about that because people have been asking me about products that I like in that area as well.
Yeah, if you use any kind of thing to clean your face, you should try
the facial scrub.
The facial scrub. It is really... It's amazing, and the facial oil is really good.
So it doesn't dry out your skin. It's clay and
for the men out there, if you have a beard, a little bit of the facial oil rubbed in your beard just really, you know, it helps the skin under this.
You sound like such a
what's they call it?
Metrosexual.
Yeah, metrosexual. Thank you. That's what I was thinking about. Yeah, so men out there, if you want a glistening beard that the ladies love, no, but it does help. It helps the skin underneath your beard, because a lot of times I get dry skin underneath my beard since it doesn't get, you know...
Exfoliated,
yeah. Thank you. So, yeah, Tropical Traditions, or Mountain Rose Herbs. Mountain Rose Herbs.
We get tons of stuff from them.
We get tons of stuff. And again,
which is why they're one of my affiliates, because I've been buying from them for years. And when they started that program, I was like, I'll do that, because I will tell anybody to buy stuff from them. I would tell anybody to buy stuff from them if they weren't I wasn't an affiliate, because it's great stuff.
And just as another reminder.
And they have supplies, too. If you want to start making your own soap, or want like that book that I recommended in my non-toxic green cleaning, it's got a recipe in there to make your own car wax. You can get all of this stuff from Mountain Rose Herbs for candle making and soap making and all of that kind of stuff you can get from them. I'm getting ready to order a few things because I'm going to try to make some soap here pretty soon.
Mm-hmm. And just as another reminder, too, if you need a calendar, we've got some. go over to the blog, look in the sidebar, and click on those links, and that will take you over to the calendar sales page, and you can order one from there and have a great gift or just something for yourself. And then some great photos, too, that are frameable. I mean, you could take those out after the calendar is done and easily frame them and have some artwork to hang up around your house. And then whenever anybody asks, you can point them to cultivatesimple.com or chiotesrun.com and tell them all about us and help spread the word, because that's what we need. We need more listeners and more people, more readers, because we just want to help people to learn, to live a more simple life, and to cultivate simple.
I'd rather be a farmer. I'd rather work the land. I'd rather see the mountain sides. I'd rather see your hand. I'd rather swim the ocean. I'd rather not pretend. rather do some thinking now. Somehow it all depends. If I could fly away from me, to ride this wind above the trees, though to fly. I'd rather hold my own.